Portland Trail Blazers fall last night to the Los Angeles Clippers, 118-89. Lethargic, uninspired basketball played by the hometown team.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah. Wasn't nearly as lethargic or uninspiring as the Nets rolled out the night before down in L.A.
Ooh, doggy.
But my goodness, that was a Kawhi Leonard-less Clippers team that took it to the Portland Trail Blazers.
Yeah, I mean, the tank stink is out. It's out. The tank, the losing, the hey, you know, everybody hold on as tight as you can. Like, we are 3 weeks away from the trade deadline. Guys are wondering where they're going to be, who they're going to be with. Do they need to move their families? You know, what's going to happen this summer? Where am I going to be? Am I going to re-sign? Am I going to extend? Restructure? Whatever is going on in their lives. And this is something that happens forever. And I'm not excusing this. This is the nastiness of the tank world. This is what happens. Everybody wants to be like, well, I want them to be like just good enough to be in every game, win a couple games that matter, don't really, but lose it. And it's like, no. When you tank, and the stink of it goes, and it goes sideways because these people are human, and that's why the Brooklyn Nets lost by 50 freaking 9 the night before. That's why you look at the Jazz team that gets you know, wins a great game one night, gets absolutely pummeled the next.
Yeah.
It's just when you're a bottom five team in the NBA right now in this world, this is what happens because it gets nasty.
That was, though, the discouraging part about the beginning of the year. We knew that this was going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why I was so harsh on that 40-point debacle to the Utah Jazz, a bottom feeder in the West, and a team that is not in it to win this year, and you lose by that much. Like, and sure, those games have been fewer and further between, but I was so harsh on it because you knew that this time of the year was going to come,
mm-hmm.
and the bottom was truly going to fall out, and the goal of this season is to have less of those blowouts, to develop young guys, and to lean on young players, right? And to Chauncey Billups' credit, we have seen growth by a lot of the young players. What we are seeing right now is how bad it gets when what you were just talking about was everything relating to a veteran player,
mm-hmm.
not a young player.
No.
Moving your family. Am I going to sign an extension? Am I going to be here past the trade deadline? Those are all things that veteran players, mm-hmm. that's when they check out. We've seen it with DeAndre Ayton.
Oh, okay? God, yeah. And I think that's more unrelated than anything else.
Last night was better than it was against Brooklyn.
There was a concerted effort to get him involved, but still
that was only on a stat sheet.
Yeah.
It was better. You still, if you watched that mm-hmm. game, you said, that ain't DeAndre Ayton playing right now. Anthony Simons.
Oh, it was maybe the worst game of his career as a starter. And it's not just Ant. It's up and down the roster. And this is
not just a one-off, though, for Ant, though.
No, it's been the last couple games.
It's been the last five games. He is 29 of 77 mm-hmm. from the field. He has scored 78 points on 77 shots mm-hmm. in five games.
Yeah, and if you look at just the entire team in general, look at what they've done in the homestand. And look at as much as the, you know, like, hey, Scoot, start Scoot. And it's like, and this is not going to be Ant's great, you know, Scoot's bad thing. It's like, Ant's been bad. Ant's been very bad, and he knows he's been very bad. But the other part of this is, do you think it's any coincidence that the Blazers' offense has been what it's been the last couple of games with Scoot Henderson starting?
No.
This, like, for all the people you say you want, again, I'm not laying this at the feet of Scoot. This is what you're going to go through, though, when you put him out on the floor and give him the extended minutes and you put the ball in his hands this much. You're going to go through the growing pains. Mm-hmm. You're going to go through Shaedon Sharpe not knowing how to play off of Scoot because the second Scoot gets off the ball, the defense is playing 5-on-4.
Well, and that has led to Tumani Kamara has not been good either.
No, I mean, well, and, to be fair, teams are, when you put Scoot, Tumani, Donovan on the floor at the same time, your spacing disappears.
Yep.
It's not going to work. Honestly, I was surprised that when Denny was injured or has been, you know, rolled his ankle, that they didn't start Chris.
Go Chris Murray instead.
And just kind of keep things relatively similar, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Because the second, number one, you're putting Scoot, Ant, and Shaedon out there. You're going with the small guards. You're moving Ant up to the two. You're moving Shaedon up to the three. And it's like, it's not that different, but the ask of them becomes different. And Scoot is a guy that has to have the ball. And if he has to have the ball, and Ant has to have the ball, and Shaden has to have the ball, and as much as Scoot is a natural creator, defenses are playing off of Tumani. Like, if you, the Miami Heat game is the perfect example of this. Two ended up with, 21 shots in that game? It's because every time Scoot drove, they sunk down off of Tumani, knowing where the ball was going to go. And I ran the numbers on it. Scoot had 10 passes to Tumani in the game against the Heat in the half court. Led to 8 shots. Because they're all wide open. Because the Heat schemed it up like, yeah, we're going to sink down. We're going to help off the strong side, which you never do. Because they're like, we're going to dare Tumani Kamara to beat us. Yeah. And he ended up going, 7 of 8 of 21, I believe, in that game. He hit, 4 of 11 threes, but the shots at the rim and the pull-ups and stuff in between just didn't go. And you start having to deal with all of these other different things. Like, the natural changes and patterns and sacrifices that kind of come with integrating somebody else who already on a team that is lacking shooting, you're inputting less shooting.
Sure.
So yeah. Like I've heard some people like, I want to see the Scoot, Shea, to Denny Donovan lineup. I'm like, I don't. I don't. Not even for a second.
Why not?
Because that would be the worst shooting lineup in the NBA. Hands down.
But isn't Denny kind of, with his shooting and the development and growth that we saw for last year, kind of not, what we wanted to see?
Yeah, sure, but he's not treated that way. None of those guys are treated. Like, Scoot could go 8 of 10 from 3 for the next 10 games. He would not be treated any differently.
Sure.
Because he's got 100 games of shooting basically 30% from 3.
Yeah.
And he's not a plus rim finisher. So they just kind of play in between on him, and they pack the paint, and they go, figure it out, dude.
Yeah.
And if Shaden Sharpe is already struggling to deal with his handle, and that's...
But I want to go back to the Denny thing really quick. Mm-hmm. Wasn't that kind of the part you liked about the acquisition of him, though, is that he is a shooter that isn't treated like a great shooter, and if you don't, he can make you pay for that?
Not necessarily. For him, it was that last year he trended up as a three-point shooter for the first time. He was incredibly effective from the
because
corners.
Because he had volume.
Yes, and he is effective from the corners. This year, he's actually been effective above the break, and he's showing levels of growth because he was a guy who was not a shooter. He was a 30 to 32%.
Yep.
Now he's getting closer to 35, 36, and we're starting to see a little bit of normalization. I don't think Denny's ever going to be a plus shooter. That's not what I think he's going to be. But he's also another guy, when you talk about, you know, Scoot, Shea, Denny, Denny is at his best when he has the ball or working as a secondary creator in the middle of the floor. Well, if Scoot has the ball, where does Denny not have the ball? And then you'd worry about, like, if Donovan Clingan's going to be like a hard roll guy, how does he get into the paint if everybody's sucked into the paint? Like, it's just like one thing feeds into another. And now you're kind of crashing up against it. There was a text on here. I want to get to the idea of, like, teams making trades and not making trades. Somebody asked, you said we should only get worried if other teams find a way to make trades, but Portland doesn't. The Suns just passed on Robert Williams from Nick Richards. Should we start getting worried? No, because Nick Richards is like the 10th, 11th man on a team, and the Suns had absolutely no assets to go get something. The difference between Robert Williams III and Nick Richards is a chasm.
On a contending team?
Yes.
Where is Robert Williams III, because, I mean, I think he's probably 8th or 9th.
No, he's your first big man off the bench. And that could be anywhere from 6th to 8th. But
yeah,
it's not because of talent. Like, Nick Richards, it's a talent. Like, he's literally just a...
I think the bigger thing there is
he's
the
just asset.
Well, the assets that Phoenix does not have to offer. If the Blazers would have sent Robert Williams to Phoenix, it would have been... widely,
Josh Okogie in a second round pick for Robert Williams III.
That would have been absolutely.
If Joe made that deal, he should have been fired on the spot.
Yeah, and so that's a team that I'm not worried about. That one,
no.
I'm worried about when actual players and actual assets get moved.
Yes,
that is a periphery move.
Yeah,
Phoenix knew exactly what they were doing. Is
they needed a warm body? Move. Like, Yusuf Nurkic has been so bad. They're basically giving him DMPs at this point.
Yep,
he's finishing, I think, his 38% of his shots at the rim.
Huh?
As a 7-footer.
Oh my gosh, who could have seen that coming?
Yeah, it's a very tough place to be.
But right.
This is the stink of the tank and the trade deadline, and some decisions are going to need to be made.